Well, why don't we begin? My name is Scott Hasserud, and this is a session on the shadow. Have some of you done some reading of Carl Jung's psychology? Do we have any Jungian scholars in the group here? Begin. I always like to do this a little differently, so maybe since I'm still eating my ice cream, you can talk and I can listen. Describe for me the most irritating, despicable, disturbing person that you can think of. And what are some of her characteristics? I want to write something on the board. Come on now.
Usually somebody who has all the answers.
Okay, all the answers.
Highly critical of other people.
Okay, highly critical. Impatient of others, right?
Impatient.
Impatient. Oh, you're wonderful.
I think someone who doesn't have any of the
selfish.
Condescending?
What?
Condescending?
I think so.
Dishonest. Okay.
Eats ice cream while others watch.
Said, we have met the enemy, and he is us. Jung claimed that we all grow up with a certain image of who we ought to be, and all of the opposites of those things tend to be pushed into the unconscious. And all of the opposites, probably for most of us, are fairly well included in this list. We would not want to be these things, and yet we all recognize that we have some of all of these things in us. And Jung called all of these things the shadow in the personality. But the interesting thing about this shadow is that it represents not only the very thing that trips us up and gets us into trouble, but also in many ways represents our potentiality. I didn't have a long, you can only put 42 characters on the bulletin board, so, or I would have said it represents not only the dark side of the personality, but also represents the potential side of the personality as well. I need to draw a little more here. If this were a picture of the personality, and all of this, as you may or may not know, that we're dealing with today is taken largely from the work of the psychologist Carl Jung. He's the one who developed the concept of the shadow. And today, you'll find many books in the bookstore on the whole notion of the shadow. It's becoming kind of a popular notion that people talk about. It's being symbolized a lot in film. You think of, what was the famous Star series? Dark Vader and
Star Wars.
Yeah. And he was a very interesting character, I thought. And of course, Lucas, whoever did that, kind of took a page really out of Jung's textbook when he created that series, and particularly the figure of Darth Vader. But if this were the personality, Jung wanted to divide the personality into two parts: that which we know about ourselves consciously, and that which we don't know about ourselves, which he called the unconscious. And the stuff of the unconscious for Jung, what's in this unconscious, Jung called complexes. That's also another word that's used a lot today. We hear people talking about so-and-so having a complex of one kind or another. One of those complexes was called the shadow. And it contains all of the stuff we would not want to be. All of the stuff that we want to be, Jung said we present to the world, kind of the face that we present to the world, or the mask that we present to the world, we call the persona. And actually, he said the mature person will have a variety of personas, not just one hat to wear, but a variety of hats to wear in different social settings. And that's actually a good thing. But we all grow up with the notion of how we ought to be, and that informs our persona, and then the opposite of that makes the content of the shadow. Now, the reason why this is of interest to lots of us is because, not only because the shadow causes so much problems between us, but because also of this, of the potential that it has. When I was growing up, for example, one of the things that was not acceptable in my household was anger. Was that true for anybody else? Was, yeah, some of the rest of you? My parents never never were angry in front of me, and I don't know to this day whether they even got angry with each other, but it was not a permissible thing. And consequently, I had some really difficult times whenever anybody was angry. Of course, I would try to placate them, or I would try to remove myself from the situation. And I could never allow myself to be angry, even if it was legitimate. Which isn't to say there's not a lot of anger that's probably not very helpful. I mean, if one is spewing anger all over the place, that's less than a helpful situation. But I literally became immobilized by anger. The first time I got angry with my wife, she clapped, which made me even more angry. But she understood that I needed to get in touch with the ability to be angry, because if you can't get angry, then you become, you know, much too bland. I mean, you lack courage. And so anger, you see, has an appropriate quality as well as an inappropriate quality. And of course, knowing the difference and being able to use them. If one doesn't get in touch with the content of one's shadow, then of course what happens is the content of that shadow uses one. So one can either shrink from anger, or I suppose at times be overtaken by anger. And also said the fact that we have complexes is not the problem. The problem is when these complexes have us. And so the more we can get in touch with them, of course, and integrate them and use them productively, then they become, the energy that's in them become accessible to us. Just to tell you a story, when I was interning in Atlanta, Georgia, my supervisor had been a colonel in the Army for 30 years. He had recently retired and had taken on this parish. And he was a very angry man. We went through 5 secretaries that year. And we used to have general quarters about 2 times a day. Any of you who've been in the military, you know about general quarters. I would get routinely reamed out. That was a phrase that he had for doing things that he felt was inappropriate, standing the wrong way at the worship service or something. I mean, you know. Anyway, I got more and more frustrated and really unable to deal with him. And finally, and Jeanette was getting sick and tired of me, you know, talking about this. So one day at the lunch table, she said, "Scott, I'll give you 2 choices. Either you go talk to Colonel Schultz." That's what he had on his door. Colonel Schultz retired. He said, "Either you go talk to Colonel Schultz and tell him how you feel, or I'm going to go talk to Colonel Schultz." And I said, "Well, okay. So I finally went over there and knocked on the door and shared with Colonel Schultz with as much vigor as I could muster that day my feelings about all of this. Now, interestingly enough, of course, our relationship got 100% better from that point on, because I was able to express some of my feelings and emotions about all of this. Okay, how do we know specifically what's in the content of our shadow, so that we can appropriate that and so we can make friends with it? One of the basic principles of Jesus was love your enemy, right? And Jesus wasn't just referring to others out there, but others inside ourselves as well. Well, one of the things that Jung said was that with your shadow, Mostly we get to know that through projection. And in other words, we project it outside ourselves onto somebody else. And that's why Pogo said we've met the enemy and that he is us. Now you all know about projection. How many of you have fallen in love in this room? You know, somebody comes along and all these feelings are pouring out of you. I mean, they're your feelings. I mean, they didn't, you know, do some kind of psychological, surgical incision and pour them in, did they? I mean, they were inside you, and yet they got focused on this other person. In fact, that expression is a wonderful one, you know, falling in love, you see. I mean, that's basically what we do, is we fall in. We fall into our own unconscious, of course. And it's a wonderful thing. Projection is a wonderful thing. You wouldn't want to live without it. Now, at some point, you have to get to know this other person, you know, and discover whether you really want, you know, a partnership here or not. And often it takes a while before whatever it is that you're projecting on that other, you know, the real person can sneak out behind whatever it is that you're projecting onto them. And then, but when that does happen, and then you begin to see the person for who they really are. And hopefully you're always projecting some on the person. Well, we also have similar kinds of experiences with people that we feel really uncomfortable with. And these are often the people that we often feel uncomfortable with, and we had a longer list up there. So as you think, you can think probably now in your own mind about various people that you have been uncomfortable with. And if they, particularly if they are in fact somebody of the same sex, Jung claimed that the shadow always appeared in a person of the same sex that we were uncomfortable with. I think that that's a bit too narrow a definition myself, but just to tell you what Jung felt. You can almost be sure that what you're looking at is your own shadow and the content of your own shadow. Now that doesn't mean that person doesn't exhibit some of those qualities. You know, when you project, it's because somebody has their hooks out for that projection. But it does mean that you have, for example, another issue for me is control. Somebody listed that over there. Well, one that's really related to it, I think, is power. A lot of us are really uncomfortable with our own power. In fact, many of us have been taught that power, what is the phrase, power always corrupts? Absolutely, yeah. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. I grew up, I think, with a value that said that any kind of power was suspect. Another story about myself. I went through a period of fascination with TV evangelists. Now, I can't stand their theology. I think what they do to manipulate people is abhorrent. I think their religion is quite different than mine. The Jesus that they're into is quite different than the Jesus that I know. I mean, there isn't anything about them that I find admirable. And they don't all fit in the same category, because I think there are some that are, you know, much better than others. But I mean, I'd be fascinated. I would listen to Jimmy Schweiger, talk about a man who got caught by a shadow. He's an interesting case. I mean, the very thing he railed against consumed him, right? Couldn't help himself. But anyway, I had this fascination, and I'd watch these people on television. My wife would get nauseated and leave the room. So I spent a few sessions with the analyst I was working with at the time, trying to figure out what was my fascination. And I really decided that it was the issue of power. And that what I, of course, ultimately needed to do was get in touch with my own power as a person. And that's why perhaps I was so fascinated by it and seeing these other people as that power. Okay, let me stop at this point and let you ask any questions. What I'm hoping to do today is simply give you a glimpse of the principle and in hopes that you might decide to do some reading. And before we leave today, I'll suggest to you some places to go to do some reading on your own.
Scott, I don't like the track, but it looks like the conscience is a vast void.
Right.
The complex is on the unconscious. What fills in the other side?
Well, diagrams are always difficult, you know. Jung would claim that it was, you know, sort of like this, you know. This is consciousness up here. Jung's principal research, as many of his critics quip, he was an unconscious psychologist. In other words, he spent the majority of his time trying to answer the question, what goes on in the unconscious? And his notion of the unconscious was quite different than Freud's notion of the subconscious. They're two quite different ideas, because this was a world that had a life and themes and motifs of its own. At the center of every one of these complexes, which are personalized in us, is a theme that we all share together. You call those archetypes. And of course, people like Joseph Campbell and others have really popularized today the whole notion of archetypes from a mythological perspective. So when Jung was pushed by people like Freud and Adler and others to develop, you know, they said, okay, they asked him just that very question. What's in consciousness? How does consciousness work? You know, just what do you think goes on in consciousness? Jung's answer to that was his typology. And you all know his typology. You may not know that you know that. But that's the most well-known part of Jung's psychology in America. How many of you have ever taken the Myers-Briggs inventory? That's Jung's concept of consciousness, of how consciousness works. Myers and Briggs picked up Jung's typology and built it and expanded it into what we now know today as the Myers-Briggs inventory, which describes two basic attitudes and four functions, and then they added the J and P categories to that. And so that's a description of how consciousness works. That's about all he... the other thing one could say about it is that one of these complexes, which is really in the unconscious, and I don't know how to draw this, it's really in the unconscious, but it functions at the center of consciousness, not at the center of the personality. You know, the center of the personality, Jung called the self. But it was not only the center for Jung, it was also the circumference. And the center of consciousness for Jung was an unconscious complex called the ego. That's another difference between Jung's psychology and most modern popular psychologies, which put the ego, their ego psychologies, and put the ego at the center of the personality. And in many ways, the persona is the expression of the ego ideal, what the ego chooses to develop because of influences in our growing up stages and so forth. The ego is the thing that decides what we're going to remember consciously or focus on and what we aren't. Every day you're exposed to a million different stimuli. You know, you drive down the highway and all these cars come at you and so forth. You obviously only remember a very small percentage of all that experience. The ego sorts it all out for you. And a strong ego for Jung was absolutely critical. Being selfish or egotistical is something quite different for Jung than developing a positive ego. And one of his claims is that Christianity gets that all mixed up. We don't understand the difference between developing a positive ego and egotism or egocentricity. Also, he said the self, which is the organizing principle of all of this, Jung called the image of God. And it was that notion that hooked me initially as a minister and as somebody who is interested in spirituality and the varieties of spiritualities and religious experiences of people and so forth. Well, that led me in all directions there. Yeah.
Did you become more aware of your shadows by watching your projections?
Yeah, okay. So one way is to really pay attention to who irritates you. And then to ask the question, you know, why do they irritate me? You know, we've all got some impatience in us, right? And maybe we need to work a bit at our own impatience. All the answers, that's an interesting one, because I can really get hooked on that one. Ministers are supposed to be wise people, right? whether they are or not. There's a kind of popular projection, particularly, we call it a wisdom persona, that you get rewarded for, particularly as a minister. Probably true, some of you in other professions too, especially if you're physicians, counselors, and so forth. I've gotten to situations where I had my collar on and not said a word, and people have thanked me for my contribution. There's the projection in part of the kind of wisdom figure, you know, the elder, the wise person, whatever is present, you know. And it's real easy to get hooked into that. So, and then when you discover that you don't know, you know, you don't know, there's a lot you don't know, you feel really compromised in some way. And there's a lot of resistance to admitting that you don't know. So I, in part, was trained, you know, through my educational process, to be a wise person. And so, in a sense, a part of my shadow is not knowing. And yet, it's the not knowing part that really I have learned can lead me to new places. It's like T.S. Eliot says in his four quartets, you know, the way from this place to next is the way of not knowing, the way of no ecstasy, the way from where we are to where we need to be. It's what we don't know that contains the potentiality for some new possibilities in our life. But if you have to pretend that you know all the time, you see, then it's all this resistance to that journey. It's also why Jung said that the shadow, in terms of the religious quest, is the first step in any serious journey. It's getting to know more about the content of the shadow. Yeah.
I don't have a real question so much.
Right.
I'd like to hear your comments on something that happened in the Bible study yesterday morning. Mm-hmm. It was brought up that in the Psalms, especially the ones we use liturgically, that they frequently just have like the first half or two-thirds that is all praise, and they leave out the part about let my enemies die, let us mash, and someone brought up, that there was a debate about this, whether, and he said psychologists often feel that desire to kill and maim our enemies is something that needs to be expressed so that we have it out in the open. While others felt, that we should just cancel that part out of the Bible and forget that it's there.
Right. Well, let me wander around a response.
Okay.
See if I can deal with that. Another thing that Jung said, which I always thought was interesting, and I don't know that I fully understand what he meant, but he said that after visiting America, he felt that Americans were the most naive of all the peoples on the globe. That they had least come to terms with evil. And that there was, and maybe that's reflected in this business of editing all of that negativity out of the song. And yet, obviously, we all know we are involved in as much evil or destructiveness as anyone is, individually, as a culture, and so forth. So there has been, I think, a kind of denial. What we've been talking here on an individual level also, Jung would want to say, works on a collective level. There is such a thing not only as an individual shadow for Jung, but there was for Jung the notion of a collective shadow. And it doesn't take much imagination to see how this principle gets extrapolated into a collective. We as a nation projecting, our own darkness onto other peoples or people. I mean, that was really true when the whole, it's out of vogue now, but up until a year or two ago, we could blame all the woes of the world on the communism, right? And many of us grew up with that. That was the great evil in the world. We even had politicians saying it. I know where the center of evil is, in the world and so forth. So that, which isn't to say that there wasn't evil there, Certainly there was. But you can see how it also was a projection of our own darkness. So my only response to that is that I think that because of our unwillingness to come to terms with our own violence, we are really uncomfortable talking about violence. Now, Jung felt that, of course, if we would all take back these projections, which we never can do totally, wouldn't in some ways really want to, because that's how we find out. But if we could, instead of saying this person is, evil, come to terms with the content of our own shadow, that would do a lot to help the problem of evil in the world. That there is a sense in which all of this projecting of our own darkness individually and collectively is what generates a lot of evil. racism is a perfect example, particularly for white folks. You know, it was easy for white folks to project onto people of dark skin all of the things that they would want to be caught dead doing. I was raised in a community that taught me that black folks were lazy, sexually irresponsible, that men didn't care about families and children. Well, I mean, you could all go through the list, right? I mean, it's a perfect example of the shadow collectively being projected onto people who have dark skin. Yeah, Bill?
And just a quick comment on what you were saying about this notion of projection and how it changes our notion of what is good education. Parker Palmer has been saying that his example, I think, that fits in here is that we teach about the Holocaust, he said, as if it was perpetrated by another species living on a different planet, as opposed to asking ourselves, is there a little bit of Hitler in my heart? You know, I think that the whole way in which we've objectified education is telling an example of why systems of oppression perpetuate even in an educated society.
Yeah, Jung wanted to make the point that we are all capable of all of these things, including being very violent. We might not be very violent, you know, necessarily very overtly, but we can be a violent in lots of differing kinds of ways, or we can perpetuate a system in a pretty violent, which is what happened, of course, prior to World War II. A system grew up out of which very dark things perpetuated and shaped that, and it wasn't even so much the person Hitler as it was what was going on in the collective unconscious. Not only those people, but of the world at that particular time. Yeah, what other question? Or comments? Or add to this?
We were talking about the issue of violence against women.
Right.
And also that when women come into political power, that often the emphasis is more on basic needs being met than less on military needs being met. I'm just wondering if it's part of the collective idea to the male portion of society in general, and the vast generation, but is it possible that some of this violence is perpetuated in secret by men through the incest and sexual abuse and other types of violence is somehow being projected onto other groups in terms of military mind and power, because that potential for violence and harm within the male community is not being dealt with in other ways.
Well,
that's too harsh. I think there's a lot of secretism that goes on that keeps males from relating to each other maybe in a positive way. And so maybe they don't come to an awareness of what's going on inside, and collectively on the larger scope of seeing this kind of aggression coming out there. It's amazing, you know, gestation on a large scale.
I think one of the things that's also contained in the shadow are kind of are often many basic instincts, and sexuality is a piece of this puzzle. Many of us are taught to be, or the persona is, as we develop as youngsters, is almost asexual. Sexuality, we are afraid of sexuality. At Holden, when we get into any kind of, you know, talk about sexuality and its various issues related to it today, those are clearly the most popular and clearly the most impassioned discussions. And when we publish an accent, little newsletter. When it has something to do with sexuality, we can count on selling many more copies than if we take on other issues. From a man's in terms of male psychology, at least amongst people in my generation and older, I think, there was, sexuality was a very frightening thing. It's not something one discussed with one's parents. What one learned about it, one learned from schoolmates, largely. It's not something that parents were afraid, I think, of having us children discover that they were sexual beings. We all knew we had to come from somewhere, but somehow the issue of sexuality didn't figure into the conversation. That there was a tremendous fear of sexuality and a tremendous repression of ourselves as sexual beings. And I think that energy has to go somewhere. And I think if it's not an energy in the psyche, if it's not used creatively, you can just about be sure it's going to be up to mischief. Because the unconscious is amoral. I mean, it doesn't have it will go wherever the ego directs it in other dimensions of the personality. So if one does not appropriate the energy that's involved in these complexes and these dynamics in creative fashion, they can be used with great power for a lot of destructive things, both in relationships and I think collectively. I think there's some other issues involved in what you said. I think that we haven't talked about, and we haven't talked about the contrasexual nature of the psyche in terms of the masculine and feminine struggle that goes on in each one of us, whether we're male or female, that battles against each other, and often that gets played out in the outer world rather than just always in the inner world. I think control is a big issue for men, and they're afraid of being out of control, and they're afraid of being controlled. And part of that comes from the struggle with women early on, because men are all mostly in our society raised by women. And so the struggle starts early in life as the young man tries to get his freedom. That's why people like Robert Bly suggest that the corrective to that, in their view, is that young men need male mentors, and that largely men have been absent from the home, working in the world, and that one thing that's really critical today is that in order to solve some of these issues is that men need to be in touch with other men as well as women. Well, that's a big complex thing. We won't go beyond it at this point. But. Okay, anything else? Yeah, John.
How do you differentiate between perception and projection? If the person actually is exhibiting this behavior,
right.
Or whether you're projecting it on based on part something that's in
it. Yeah, that's always the critical question, So whenever you find yourself uncomfortable with someone else, when that happens to me, then I have to say, okay, now Scott, am I projecting here, or is this other person really exhibiting these behaviors, or is it a combination of both? I was in a parish once for 12 years and got to know people very well. And I could almost tell what was going on at home by how they felt about me on a given day. before, I could have a sense of whether I had really been insensitive. But for somebody that I don't know very well, it's often very difficult sometimes. It's real obvious if it's somebody you don't know, and they obviously haven't done anything to merit your wrath, that obviously you're rejecting. But as the relationship gets better known to you, it sometimes actually gets more difficult to know. So I would say you live with a question, and just live with that question. And try to understand, am I projecting here? Or is this other person really being insensitive to me, just not hearing me, exhibiting some qualities that are less than admirable? Okay. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Would you say that analyzing dreams is another way to look at the shadow?
Right.
Sure.
You're often in your dreams you'll have shadow figures. Have you been chased? Threatened. Or there's some kind of conflict going on in your dream between you and somebody else. And particularly in the dream if it's somebody of the same sex. Often there's some quality that you're struggling with that's a part of the context of your shadow that the self has decided it's time for you now to deal with this issue. You need to deal with that. Another way is there are some kind of, classic stories about shadow figures, both in contemporary literature and, I think seeing a movie like Star Wars and thinking about Darth Vader, but thinking about Darth Vader as a shadow figure is an interesting kind of discipline. I think shadow figures show up sometimes for us in institutions that we work with. We accuse the institution of impatience, control, being two-faced, dishonest, condescending, selfish. In other words, the feelings we are having about that institution. In fact, they may be those things, but it may also help us understand some of the dimension of our own shadow. And so those would be some examples. Yeah.
I recollect, correct me if I'm wrong, but from my union studies that another way that which was very surprising to me was confession. I remember three in dream analysis and therapy, and then confession was the third. But as I thought about that in groups that I've been in where there's honest disclosure, it seems like, and confession, we really get at our shadow.
Yeah.
Too.
Also, you find yourself doing things that the shadow. Other qualities of the shadow, being dishonest yourself, telling a lie yourself, there's a lot that goes on in affairs, but there can also be a part of the reason why people get caught in those. They happen to them, but they don't necessarily choose them. They happen to them. It's because of the power of the shadow, and particularly if sexuality has been a dimension of the personality that's been largely rejected. Just being really suddenly impatient with someone yourself. And you say, whoa, where did that come from? I mean, I didn't really have reason to be impatient with them, or overcritical. We had, highly critical here. Suddenly you find yourself being overly critical. And it really wasn't called for it, right? I mean, and you step back and you realize, gee, there really wasn't cause for that. But you just found yourself doing it, I mean, it just sort of came out of you, right? Because the unconscious is wanting, in some ways, the positives. You see, even though that was a negative, destructive thing, it can be positive in the sense that it does allow you now to come to grips with that, or get in touch with that, or deal with that. That's where, of course, a spiritual companion, a spiritual director, a therapist, some kind of therapeutic alliance, peer counseling with someone else, where you can talk about these things, is often really helpful. Yeah.
Wondering, if I understand it, when we have given attention to this society and friends, whether these come from the right. Therapy. Right. I wonder if one way to deal with that and befriend those things is to make a conscious effort to befriend the person who aggravates you.
Yeah. Right. Because then you can really understand, I think, what John was trying to struggle with here. To what extent is it my projection? And to what extent does that person really exhibit those qualities, right? Right. Well, I'd like to recommend to you some further reading. I think getting in touch with the shadow is absolutely critical for all of us, not only for our personal relationships with each other, but I think as a nation it's critical today. We've just got to stop projecting all this stuff on others and deal with it in ourselves. There's really a lot of good stuff. The best book I've read of late is a collection of articles called Meeting the Shadow, The Hidden Power of the Dark Side of Human Nature. And it's an anthology. It has all kinds of people from Scott Peck to Rollo May to Jung to Robert Bly to Joseph Campbell. Ernest Becker, Bougainville Craig, and others. The reason I like this, I like books where I can start in the middle and read to the left, read to the right. Many of these chapters are 3 or 4 pages long. That's another thing I like about it. You kind of get the gist of what the person's. I mean, most books, quite frankly, you read the first chapter and the last, you got it, and everything else is filler in the middle. And particularly in my field. So I've got shelves of books where I've only read about half of them. Once you sort of figure out where they're going, then you... But this is a wonderful book. Bill Miller, who's a pastor in Minneapolis, has written 2 books that I think are helpful. Making Friends with Your Shadow. How to Accept and Use Positively the negative Side of Your Personality. Or Discovering and Fulfilling Your Undeveloped Self, Your Golden Shadow. That's kind of a line taken from Jung. Jung talked about the shadow as being 80% gold. Because you see of its potentiality. And he said, we're much too bland to people without the energy it provides. And so Bill picks up on those. And a new little book by Robert Johnson. Some of you may know his work. He's written some wonderful pieces on relationships. And I think every person that's in a committed relationship ought to read We. That was preceded by his 2 little books called He and She. He also has a marvelous book called Inner Work, which is a description of Jung's notion of active imagination, this way in which we can dialogue with what some of the things that are going on in the unconscious. And now his most recent one, owning your own channel. All these are available in the bookstore. Well, our hour has gone, and I want to thank you for being a great group here this afternoon. So thanks a lot.